Yeah, we have an obese cat, and who I'm obsessed with. If you follow me on Twitter, you
Yes, I'm
probably
familiar.
know. She's all I talk about. But I always wanted to get a dog, and my boyfriend can't stand dogs, so I just decided to get the biggest cat I could find. And her name is actually, well, her name is Misty, but we just call her Doggy because I like to pretend that she's a dog. So.
Hello, you're listening to episode 17 of The Flyover Effect, a podcast about startups, design, and all things internet. I'm Scott Rocketship, your producer and frequent co-host. Also joining me from BitMethod are Amanda Morrow and Dan Shipton. You can learn more about our company at www.bitmethod.com. Also with us today is Megan Fisher. She's a web designer at MetaLab, lives in Brooklyn, blogs at owltastic.com, and she talks with us about fear and awkwardness in the tech industry, public speaking, getting started, finding a good community of people to surround yourself with, and a whole lot more. Enjoy the show.
Probably the last truly terrifying thing I had to do, or I didn't have to, but the thing I did, was giving a workshop at Interlink in Vancouver. It was really fun and exciting, but it was also my first four-hour workshop, and I was in a room full of about 40 people, I think, who all had different backgrounds, and the name of the class was Mastering CSS 3 or Advanced CSS 3 or something like that, but I got into the room and realized that half the people didn't really even know basic CSS 2. So just having to adapt a talk on the fly like that is kind of terrifying. But it turned out to be really fun once I kind of got to know some of the people in the workshop and once I kind of got into the flow of just adapting what I was trying to say about CSS. It got better. But doing a speaking gig is actually kind of terrifying. And I think I've done about 7 or 8 and everybody tells me that it gets easier as you go, but I haven't felt that yet.
Where does that fear come from, of just presenting oneself, or what do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's presenting yourself and just, I mean, we're so used to interacting with people online, so you always have that kind of filter where you're not completely putting yourself out there when you're giving advice or talking to someone about a certain design technique. It's a lot easier when you're doing everything from behind a glass screen. And when you're getting up on a stage and presenting yourself as an expert on a topic in front of, you know, dozens or hundreds of people, you don't have that filter. You have to not stumble and get it right the first time. And it can be a little terrifying. And I've had some people ask me some kind of confrontational questions in the middle of a presentation about articles I've written and things like that. And coming up with a coherent answer on the fly is a little bit terrifying, but I do think with practice you get more comfortable with it.
I mean, how do you feel when you talk to other people? Do you think everyone else is kind of scared too? Does that make it reassuring at all, or is everyone kind of playing it off like, oh, it's no big deal?
Well, I think everybody's kind of equally terrified of each other.
See, that's the kind of the feeling I get sometimes, too.
Oh, totally, completely. Yeah. We're all so impressed with everyone else. And I know what that's like. I mean, I'm totally giddy every time I talk to or interact with, like, Zeldman. Or I remember when I first went to go work for Dan Cederholm at Simple Bits, how intimidated I was just by speaking to someone that I thought was an expert in their field and who I'd followed the career of. So, of course, Dan is like a humble and totally great guy and puts you at ease instantly. So I guess I just mean I can kind of understand where they're coming from, having been on the other side of it. And I still feel that way when I meet new designers that I love.
We were just talking about that. Our developer, I think Neil was saying about South by Southwest, of how it's this like gathering of people where like two people can meet and like both be terrified and think that the other person they're meeting is like the coolest person on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, completely.
Which seems, and I think what you mentioned about like the online versus offline is a compelling thought, because if you think about like celebrities, like, I don't know, like Hollywood type celebrities, those people generally have worked together You know, right. Like there's a lot of environments where they get thrown together. Maybe it's intimidating on the first day, but then there's like 6 weeks in the trenches on location doing the shoot, and they really get to know each other. Whereas in the tech industry, it's this kind of, you know, maybe you've run into this person a couple of times at conferences, maybe you've collaborated on something digitally, but you know, there's a very different vibe of actually getting to know someone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, completely. And yeah, I mean, you have to remember, we're all just nerds.
Yeah. <You know? laughs>
Like, to some extent, we probably all got into this because we're sort of socially awkward, and we were the kids that hung out behind our computers in high school. And
that's so hard to remember. I wish I remember that more often. Yeah. You know, I think that would help a lot.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we're all equally awkward, so there's nothing to be intimidated about. And I have to remind myself of that when I'm up on stage, too. Or just, you know, in a situation like this where you're pretending to be an expert on something.
Well, Amanda, you just did, you just put together a presentation about your design process, presented to some graphic designers in Des Moines. Was that, you seemed a little nervous about it. How did fear play into what you were doing?
It's weird because this time I tried to approach it from, you know, making sure that I kind of added some sort of theater to it. And I think that actually makes it a little easier because you can kind of joke around and not take yourself too seriously. And I think that's, you know, if you are the expert and you play that role very, very seriously, I think sometimes that can just make you seem like a douche, you know? Like,
oh, completely.
So I try not to, you know, I try to be goofy. I try, you know, to tell, like I said, the insecurity things. Like, I'm getting better at being like, hey, guys, you know, I don't know everything. This is how I do it. So I try to take that approach where I make myself approachable to them and say, you know, I'm trying to teach you these things. You can take and leave whatever information I have left on the table for you. And, you know, just I want to get this conversation going.
You are a lady on a mission. And you were actively trying to recruit, you know. The talk was to a bunch of print designers or just designers in general, and she was trying to get them hooked into, hey, look, you can do this digital.
Yeah, learn more about the web type of thing. Yeah. And I mean,
that's always a fun conversation.
Yeah, in Des Moines.
Well, talk about confrontational. Yeah. I mean, there's some people that are very, it's kind of like the development philosophies of like the JavaScript and the Scala guys picking at each other. Like the print designers kind of have their defenses raised little bit, I think, when people try and talk to them about digital.
Yeah. And I'm trying not to say like, oh, you need to switch completely over. I'm just like, I think you should, you know, you might want to learn this stuff, because that's where I started too. I mean, that's where most designers nowadays started, in print of some sort, you know. So
sure. Well, I think what you said about giving this sort of caveat that you're not an expert is really important. And that's kind of a technique I always use.
Yeah.
The first talk I gave was a future web design in London, and I remember I sent them like a list of topics.
Starting small, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was completely stunned when I got that invitation, and they said, "What would you like to talk about?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't really think I'm an expert on any one thing. I mean, you know, I love to design, and I can talk about that." And they were like, "Well, we'd really like someone to speak about designing mobile interfaces." And this was before the iPhone had come out, so I really hadn't even given that much thought to mobile. It was before the time when everybody was on their smartphones 24 hours a day. So I just sort of dug into it as much as I could. I remember reading Cameron Mall's mobile book, I think. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I said when I got up on this stage in front of 800 people was, "I am just now learning about mobile and don't know that much about it yet. So here's what I've learned so far, and here's the techniques I've used to get comfortable with mobile design, coming from web design." And I, you know, at the time that felt completely ridiculous to be saying that, but a lot of people approached me afterwards and said, "Oh, it was such a relief to hear that you're new to this too, and hear your perspective on those challenges." So I think coming at it from that, if you kind of humble yourself and say, "I'm in the same position as you, you know, I've just been called upon to speak about this, so here's where I'm coming from," it kind of helps. It puts you at ease, and it puts the audience at ease as well. And one thing Dan Cederholm always does in a talk that I've kind of stolen from him is he'll tell like a personal story about back before he was the successful designer we know now. So he always tells a story about his terrible little one-bedroom studio apartment in Austin and sitting on his computer designing horrible sites. So that's something I usually do too. I'll talk about the days of, you know, doing Flash tutorials and designing all my sites in Flash. And
yeah, because, I mean, nobody's just born able to do what we do, you know?
Like, oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
And I think, you know, it's tough when you're new because you're like, man, I want to get good really, really fast. Or, like, how do I get there? But you just got to be patient, you know?
Yeah, just stick with it. And, I mean, you're going to have to do the terrible sites for a while.
Yep.
And you're going to have to, you know, just be pissed at yourself that you're not progressing at the rate you want. But I mean, I still feel that way. I still look at designs and think, why aren't they as good as I want them to be? I don't know if that ever goes away.
Common sense wisdom or whatever is like the 10,000 hours thing, right? Like 10,000 hours to be an expert. And if you take into consideration what we do, you just with digital stuff, with technology, like it's
right.
I don't know how anyone becomes an expert ever, because the thing that you become an expert at changes every 6 months.
Yeah.
Like the standards change, the technology changes, I don't know, the iPhone comes out, the iPhone 5 comes out. Like maybe 10,000 hours to become an expert carpenter or baker. You
those
know,
industries
I don't know.
That don't really change that
yeah,
much.
And industries that don't change that much. And then even at that point, some, you know, things change and everybody's moved in a new direction and your expertise becomes worthless. So I think there's a lot of value in that, of just being able to say, here's what I know right now. Like, here's where I came from in knowing it. Here's what we're trying to do next. That honesty is really refreshing. And it's one reason I like the tech industry, is I think people are a little more willing to say that than maybe the traditional, you know, big C corporate business types and traditional marketers. I mean, change and iteration is the name of the game.
Yeah. So. Well, no one wants their carpenter to say, I don't really know what I'm doing. You know, like, oh, you're building my house? Like,
I'm going to start with your kitchen, and then I'll come back and build you a living room.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I guess if you just, I mean, if you try to start with a foundation of kind of web standards and those principles, and always thinking in terms of putting accessibility first, and there are a few key guidelines that kind of are unchanging, whether you're talking about an iPhone or for the web. So that helps to know those foundations.
So for like the projects that you do, I mean, what do you think is most important? I know from my standpoint, like the design principles I learned in college, like the basic rules of design, I can use on everything that I've built, you know. Symmetry is pretty similar no matter where you go, typography, things like that. Is there other things that you can think of?
Right. Well, that's mainly what I'm talking about is, I mean, print designers are sort of intimidated about moving to the web. And the same way web designers might be intimidated the first time they do a mobile interface. But if you understand those key design principles like typography, readability, using a grid system and knowing how that works. All those kinds of things they teach you in like graphic design 101 still apply.
Yeah.
And even though we might all be kind of reinventing ourselves every 6 months when, you know, an article about responsive design comes out or, you know, a new iPhone is launched, there's still those key foundations that you know that you can kind of build upon. And that stuff that I never went to design school. I worked on a degree in English Lit before I found web design. And everything I've learned about it has mostly just been through experience. And I feel like people who have a background in graphic design kind of have an advantage, even though sometimes they feel disadvantaged because they're learning to work in a new medium, because they already know those design principles, whereas I've had to pick those up as I go.
Yeah.
Mostly through criticism. Like, even now, I work with MetaLab, and all the designs we do get posted on Notable, which is a really great service, by the way. You guys should check it out if you haven't used it.
For sure.
But it's just a handy way to like use the browser to kind of make notations on a design. And even now, I'll get feedback about type being unreadable or my kerning being bad from one of the team members. And I think, God, how long have I been doing this? I should know this by now.
Yeah.
That's an important part of being a designer for sure, is just being able to accept that criticism.
Have you gotten better at taking criticism and stuff? I think that's a lot of times a lot of designers' problems is like they kind of want to go in a corner and they want to sit there and they want to, you know, toil away at something and then they want to come out with this masterpiece and they don't want anyone to talk about it. You know, it's just like, I'm done. And I know for myself, like, I've had to get really used to just quickly reiterating my designs and working on them and editing them. And I mean, did you kind of go through a similar process or have you always been pretty open to feedback?
Oh, no, I'm still, I mean, I know criticism is important and I see the way it's benefited me, but it's still so hard for me to take.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm just a narcissist or if all designers are like this, but I mean, I can remember terrible interfaces I built back when I started in like 2004. that at the time I thought, I don't want to hear it. Like, this is fine. This is good to go. And it's a good thing people still pushed me on that and said, no, you need to improve. You need to get better. This isn't quite right. Because that's how you learn.
Yeah.
But even today I'll get in fights with Andrew, who is the sort of lead designer at MetaLab. We'll get in arguments about like gradients on a button. And it's just ridiculous to have those debates. Yeah, I think it takes time. You have to practice it to get good at receiving criticism and also giving helpful criticism.
Yeah.
I think Dribbble is actually a really great space for that.
I was just going to ask, do you think Dribbble has changed how you've worked at all? I mean, that's kind of, I've been watching that grow.
Well, I would say that, I mean, I can't post a lot of the stuff I'm doing now because a lot of it's behind like an NDA or something like that.
Yeah.
But I've noticed from a lot of the people I follow who do post work regularly that some of the feedback they get is really great. And it's kind of a comprehensive, you know, I mean, some people say that you have too many cooks in the kitchen sometimes when you're posting work on Dribbble where it's getting hundreds of views. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I think it can be really helpful to get sort of feedback from a larger community of designers. And also, it's just a great resource for inspiration. I've spent hours on there on those days when you're stuck and you just can't get past a certain point in the design. There's nothing that quite gets me through it like going through Dribbble and looking at all the amazing work out there. And a lot of times I feel challenged just by seeing all the amazing things that people are doing. Sometimes people who are really new to design or it's great seeing work from a lot of different fields. Like, I love that Dribbble has illustrators and photographers and motion graphics people, as well as web designers. It gives you, like, a broader field to look at.
Yeah.
So I would say it's changed the way I work in that it's a great resource for inspiration. And when I can post stuff, it's a great resource for feedback, for sure.
It's funny because I hear some designers also say, like, oh, man, I can never be that good. Or, like, it's almost like a negative effect. I mean, have you ever had that happen where it's just, like, oh, I want to be, you know, I'm not to that level yet. And it's kind of, you look at this other work and you're like, wow, maybe someday, you know?
Oh, absolutely, all the time. And like I was saying before, I don't think that ever really goes away where you feel, I don't want to say inadequate, but just challenged by the talent around you. And yeah, but I think that's a good thing. I think it motivates you when you see the work that other people are doing and challenge yourself to meet that level of quality. And of course, we all kind of, I don't want to say that we steal ideas from people or something like that, but you pick up on the styles that are out there and maybe it challenges you to try something new in your own designs or a different technique. So
yeah, and we've talked about that before, how it's totally like fashion trends. You know, you start seeing your friends wear skinny jeans and you're like, oh, maybe I'll get a pair of those. And so you kind of like start taking on similar looks to your friends and stuff. But I mean, it's kind of that trending thing. I mean, I don't know, like recently especially, there's like a lot of the typography, I'm seeing the same fonts and stuff, but they're just kind of trends. And so you can choose to use them or go in opposite direction, you know?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's fun to take that and kind of riff on it where I love this, the trend right now of people using old woodblock text and seeing that in a design. And sometimes if you use like woodblock fonts in conjunction with a more modern look, it creates a different kind of feel. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to take the trends and kind of remix them in different ways. And
the what's nice about Dribbble and some of those communities is getting that, maybe even this podcast, is like getting that communication going helps people understand the trends. Because I think that's when it's bad, is when somebody notices the trend but doesn't understand it, you know?
Right.
And then you kind of get almost like, I don't know, it's almost like cargo cult stuff where things are just popping up in weird ways and weird places that don't make any sense. Yeah. That's something in when it comes to mobile interfaces that we see a lot, like the pull to refresh at the top of the screen. Like that's something we've had passionate debates about pull to refresh of it being like, if there's not supposed to be anything more at the top, why am I pulling down at the top? Like it's a cool interface element. I'm glad that people like it, but you don't understand what it's for.
Yeah.
And that gets tricky. That gets tricky.
It's like the old days of Web 2.0 when you would have clients saying, you know, just add a gradient. I don't care if that needs to be a, I mean, originally you would make something glossy because that was the most prominent element on the page. That was the call to action or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the trend kind of developed from there. And then you would have clients just say, put a gloss on everything or use big type for everything. So yes, definitely the trends can spin out of control or just take an ugly turn. That's part of it, you know?
I'm curious, Megan, to go back a little bit on the foundational stuff. When you mentioned that you didn't go to design school, how did you educate yourself on those foundational elements? Because I feel like you see a lot more tutorials on how to create a gloss effect than you do tutorials that say why you would want to use a gloss effect.
I hate to say this because it makes it sound like it's something that's sort of inborn, which I don't think is necessarily true. But a lot of times it would kind of come from an instinct. Like I wouldn't realize that I was trying to apply a grid to my design, but I would find myself lining things up in columns without even really knowing what that term meant or what that was.
So you have OCD as well?
Yeah, exactly. You have to be a little bit crazy to be a designer. I think I just kind of picked up on it. Geez, I guess.
No, I think that's very valid. I don't think that I'm going to encourage you to not be embarrassed about that.
No, I think, I mean, I think everyone has to kind of have an instinct with whatever they're doing, you know, even if you're writing, like you got to have an instinct of whether it sounds correct or not, or if it's readable. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say a big part of it too is always trying to make myself work with people who are more talented than I am or who have that background and that foundational knowledge, because then they let you in on their secrets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you make yourself work with a team where everyone around you is better at what they're doing than you are, you can pick up on those kind of techniques without even trying that hard. Like I haven't read as many design books probably as I should, but I've learned a lot through the experience of being around awesome designers.
I mean, who's pushing you out of your comfort zones, you know, when you're a little insecure about something or, you know, like these speaking engagements? I mean, is someone else saying, hey, because I know around here, like these guys push me to do a lot of stuff and I'm like, I don't know. And then afterward, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I did that, you know?
Well, certainly my boyfriend's always encouraging me to put myself out of my comfort zone, which is great. Even though sometimes I hate him for it, right? And the fear leading up to it, I'm like, why did you make me do this?
But,
I mean, I've always wanted, having gone to conferences before I actually started speaking, I always thought it would be amazing to be that person up there, like sharing my ideas, because I have ideas about this stuff too.
And yeah.
I feel like my process could bring something to the table too. So I guess it just comes from seeing that and wanting to be a part of it and pushing myself. But yeah, the people I'm around who are usually more talented than I am do kind of encourage you and push you. And those are the kind of people you want to surround yourself with, for sure.
Does environment, location, geography play into that at all? Do you feel like you're in a inspiring, competitive place that's pushing you forward? I understand you work in an office environment with some kind of heavy hitters in the tech industry. What's that like for you?
It's amazing. actually, coming to work in Studio Mates was part of, or just being around the people who are here in Studio Mates, which is what we call our little space, is part of what motivated me to want to come to Brooklyn and New York in general. I had gone to Brooklyn Beta last year and gave a workshop there, which is just like a little impromptu friendly conference that a few of these guys put on. And after meeting the people that live here in Brooklyn and work here in Brooklyn, I just wanted to surround myself with them. So I do think the environment and your coworkers and the people you work near makes a big difference, because they challenge you and they'll kind of hang over your shoulder and look at something and say, oh, that doesn't, you know, that isn't quite aligned correctly, or, you know, they'll give you that objective perspective that really helps. And if they're people you admire and people you trust, then you can really grow from listening to their advice. So I think it makes a difference. I mean, I started out working in Orlando, and there's not a very thriving tech community there, at least compared to other cities like Boston, where I just came from, mm-hmm. or Brooklyn. And I do think it's important to have a real-world sense of community, not just online, but in person as well.
It's a good instinct. I mean, the kinds of people that find themselves success seem to push themselves into those environments. You know, there are not a lot of successful big, there aren't a lot of big successful web designers, mobile designers, whatever, in our neck of the woods. And Amanda's kind of been, you've kind of been pushing yourself to mm-hmm. organize, rally those people, get that attention, build a critical mass to have more people doing that. And that's a lot of work.
It is.
Just to Absolutely. Improve your own design skills. Like yeah. That's a lot more work than reading a book or going to a conference.
Well, and I mean, some of the people that are good in our area are kind of hermits because there's not this other community to support them. And it's unfortunate because I'm the same way. Like, I want to be around smart people. I want to be around talented people. And so I was like, well,
yeah.
If they're not here, I guess I will make them. So, I mean, that's kind of the approach. And it's getting better. I think the problem, too, is a lot of people aren't patient. And I'm trying to just be patient and learn with everyone else as well. So, but yeah, I totally understand what you're saying with, you know, just being around a good group of people.
Yeah. I mean, Matthew Smith of Squared Eye, for example, lives mm-hmm. in a small town in South Carolina. And I would never think of any town in South Carolina is necessarily being like a tech hub. But he started a co-working space, and I haven't actually been down there yet, but one of my office mates, Cameron, went down, and he's done like all kinds of neat little unconference type things. And it's really built like a sense of community down there, to the point where I'm jealous and I want to go down and check out and see what's happening. So, I mean, I think it is doable, but you're right. It takes a lot of work. And when I lived up in Boston, we would have little tech meetups now and again in Salem, which was just north of Boston. And it's hard to get everybody to come out and get together. Again, it's overcoming that hurdle of us all being awkward nerds. But to all the awkward people out there, it's totally worth it. It'll help with your career and your people skills if you go out and try to connect with other designers in your area.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was a pleasure talking to you. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
It was so great to meet you guys.